Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 28 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois. In the second half of the program, we'll talk about the USDA reports with Illinois ag economist Daryl Good.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Let's start with this question. Dale Durkles, I'd like to start with the grain stocks report, but in particular, the wheat numbers. You would have thought there might have been greater disappearance, given all of the chatter in the industry about wheat being fed to the livestock, about ethanol being made from wheat, but it simply didn't happen. In fact, compared to last year, there wasn't as much usage as there was prior.
You know, there really wasn't, and that's probably, you know, the corn people are looking at that and going, that's the biggest single surprise, and that, you know, the wheat stocks number implied that our consumption for feed and residual was down in the last quarter, and everybody is really puzzled right now at what happened to all the feed consumption number that we have here, because it didn't show up in wheat to the same degree, more or less, that it didn't show up in corn.
And then corn usage, on the other hand, didn't show up, as he said.
And we have no hay and we have no pasture. What are we feeding? I know it's low cattle numbers, but we still have to feed them something.
It's probably the DGGs that we didn't produce by closing all the ethanol plants.
You know, I think the one thing that everybody's going to come back to in the long haul when you look at this whole argument, it shows up in beans. And I think to a certain degree we'll probably see people start talking about it in corn, in that there are some real implications in that last year's crops were underestimated. And when you have a really short crop, that's not all that unusual either. So, you know, that starts to build part of the argument going forward at this point. The other part of the mix in it is that we go back and we look at the December 1 stocks, which at that point seemed abnormally low and gave us a huge feed consumption base during the fall months. And then we also, you can just keep stepping back through stocks reports last September and all the way back to last summer.
Yeah, 200 million seems to be the number that gets switched around and has since, what, 2009 or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, so, and that's roughly what we ended up finding, you think, at the ending stocks this time around?
You know, we actually, compared to trade guesses, we were up, I think, somewhere around 360 million, but I would guess when it all shakes out, the USDA will add something like 200 million under their ending stocks number when we get the S&D here in a couple of weeks.
How was trade reaction on Thursday during the trading hours?
Very negative. I mean, when that was reported, we were down 6 to 8 on corn and 4 to 5 down and up on beans. And as soon as the report came out, within, what, 10 minutes, we were down limit on corn. And beans went down 55, 57 at one time. So it was very negative. It was a shock finding a higher stocks number, that 200 million higher than the highest guess.
Reason for fear in the farm community, you think, as far as it concerns prices, old or new crop?
I don't think we've seen it all yet. I think it was maybe a little overreaction today. I think it'll come back some. But this tells us, when we went right back to the old lows, that we could easily make new lows now and get that 4 in front of corn numbers.
You know, one thing we have to remember in the performance we had on Thursday, especially in the corn market, that the old crop was limit down. If you go back and you look at the CFTC reports from the last couple of weeks, the big hedge funds, spec funds, whatever you want to call them, they had built a moderate long position in the corn market here just over the last 2 to 3 weeks. And so when the report came out, when the market broke down, all of a sudden, you know, when you hit their stops in their computers, it was just, get me out, and there was nobody who was willing to stand in against it, too. And I think that's part of the reason we ended with limit losses.
Limit losses, does that mean we might have a nice little bounce somewhere in the next week if it's that side of the marketplace that jumped out so quickly and it was computer-driven?
Yes, there will be, Todd, but I think, unfortunately, we're going to see some margin calls selling or liquidation that's going to occur Sunday night and Monday because they're going to be really mean about these margin calls come Monday morning. I know that they were even doing midday market or margin calls on Thursday for the large accounts. So that's going to push a little more. But we do think that that will cause a little bit of a bounce later down the road. We're up against some good technical support. We've got a lot of people that do not believe these numbers, that can't figure out how we raised livestock with no corn or wheat being fed.
CME Group seemed to think it was coming and wasn't so surprised. They raised their margin calls on corn and volatility factors prior to the report.
They did have an inclination. I think that Dale hit on the fact that the open interest was so high, and they just were very scared of what would happen if the government did come with a surprising number. You know, 7 out of the last 12 years, we've seen a limit move in corn after this report. So it's not unusual for them to think there's going to be a lot of movement.
You know, the one thing you have to put in perspective here, and I know the options were trading an implied level down roughly against 678, the old lows on the May contract. But the kind of break that we put in place in here, not just on Thursday, but over the last couple of days, you brought corn prices back to a level that's going to accomplish two things. Number one, producers are going to slam the door, so we aren't going to get any farm selling against the break to a great degree. The other thing is, and there's still enough uncertainty about whether to believe it or not, you know, and I won't get into that game, but the end users out there, I think they're going to take the opportunity with the break in prices, reach out, step up the buying. And so I think that gives you a good short-term low here, probably the first couple of days sometime next week.
You agree?
I just wonder what the basis is going to have to be for them to pull anything out of any farmers right now. When you drop it that much in one day, will they raise their basis, what we dropped on Thursday? That's a big question.
I'm going to disagree. I think this is going to scare some farmers. I think there's some that are going to say, gosh, I don't want to take less than so much now, and they will move a little bit of corn again. We were in the grain business for a lot of years, you know, the cash grain business, and we stirred a lot more interest in actually selling cash on a down market than ever on an up market.
Are there lessons to be learned from 80, 83, 88, 95, 6 area on this marketplace?
I think there's lessons on everywhere, but I don't know what they are today.
In terms of short crops and what happens.
No, I think you go back and really, and I lived through it, and so did these guys. You know, you go back into the 70s and the early 1980s anyway. You know, we'll leave 88 hang out on its own because we had a period in there where we had real low prices. But in the 70s and into the early 80s, we had a lot of surprises on stocks reports, bullish and bearish both. And, you know, we had a lot more volatility in those numbers themselves. And we always have a difficult time in the trade understanding that, you know, the USDA, as inaccurate as it is, they're doing a statistical sample. They're not actually going out and doing an exact inventory of everything they can see. They're sampling a portion of the population and taking that and making an estimate off of that. So there's sampling error in it. But I think also, you know, it really is steps back and it makes you understand they're doing an inventory versus us in a trade under expectation. We're doing some statistical estimates on some other things, and those are two different animals.
Other than being a really cool number at $999 million for the soybeans on hand, the stocks, what'd you think of that number?
Well, I thought it was a little higher than everybody was looking for, myself included. I think that basically along the way that soybean processing plants have had to pay up for beans to try to get any to move, it seems a little high. It seems like some farmers at over $15 would have sold more beans if they had them. I think the other thing it tells us is we've shipped a whole bunch of beans out of here. Was our bean harvest actually a little bit better than what the government and all the statisticians said last year? Are there a few more bushels, or was there a little bigger carryover on some of these guys that still had a few bushels left in their bin?
Yeah, this one's a little bit easier to back figure and try to come up with where the number is wrong, because we have such strong exports and we that one we can relatively.
Well, you know your demand base. I mean, that, yeah. On beans, you know your demand base versus corn. You know, you're feeding residual
really.
Is a residual number.
Right.
So in beans, you know, to a certain degree, it's what your demand really is. And so it is easier to look back and look at it. The one thing I take away from this, though, you know, with the bean number coming in just generally 50 million more than what the trade was thinking, I think you take that in a combination of, folks, realize we're harvesting a record crop in South America, and it's a crop that's coming into the pipeline. You know, yeah, we've had logistics problems, but those are getting resolved, and we're slowly moving forward with this whole thing. You know, when you look at it from a monetary standpoint, who wants to buy beans? Why does anybody want to buy beans at 14 and a half or even at 14 today when you're harvesting a record crop in South America? And, oh, yeah, now we got a few extra bushels here in the U.S. and we probably aren't going to get to a point where we need to import any beans this summer with these extra bushels here. So I really come back and go, where does the buying come from in beans? I don't see it.
And you think there's a... There was a bigger harvest last year on both corn and soybeans, but soybeans in particular? Or not?
Soybeans in particular. I mean, it's an easier way to argue at this point when you look at the numbers that the crop was probably underestimated a little.
I'd just like to know where they're finding in these statistical or these surveys, where they're finding the corn that is still out there. I've got two or three elevators in my area that are sweeping their bins, cleaning them now. They're empty. And we didn't have that bad of crop right in that area. So I question where the survey, where it got its numbers.
We'll get to the prospective plantings in just a moment, but let's deal really with old crop and marketing and whether this changes your mind about marketing plans you've had in place. Fundamentally, when the USDA reports come out, many people will readjust based on the new numbers. Do you change your options?
Old crop beans at this point, I basically have been 90% sold in the last couple of weeks, and I think we'll get a little bit of bounce once the break is over with, but I think people need to get bean sales, old crop, to a point they're only going to have gambling stocks that they want to carry into summer. The corn market, I think at this point, I would be a little bit stronger holder, but, you know, the depth of the break then will start to clarify what kind of a rebound. I think getting back to 7.5 nearby futures is all but impossible now.
Cash beans in the last week, you could get over 15 in RA. You could get over 750 corn. I had some guys getting 780 from ethanol plants. I think you get those kind of prices, you sell everything you have.
That would be good, Pete, but are we going to get back to them?
I don't know that we will, unless the basis does it.
Yeah, I mean, basically along the way, you know, in our area, Poets down there, they've started bringing some wheat in to blend with their corn because they aren't able to source the corn like that. Is the wheat going to fill the gap on that? That's a big question mark. I think the basis levels will especially after this big drop, will probably stay pretty strong. But I think we've still lost 50 cents out of the market here on Thursday, and I think that we have to look for small rallies to be a seller of what we got left. I'm like Dale, basically – I had most of my customers, I think, in a very much – they had gambling stocks left, what they wanted to see, and we hung on to a few bushels that way for the tight basis. So, you know, we haven't got but 10 or 15% left, so it's not so bad. But on the inch back up, sell.
New crop now. Let's deal with the prospective plantings report. USDA says corn farmers will put some 97.3 million acres of that crop in the ground. It would be the highest planted acreage – except for last year, in the United States since 1936. They planted 102 million acres way back then during the Dust Bowl.
Isn't that amazing? You wouldn't have thought it had been then, but we had a lot more corn and very few beans at that point in time was what's going on. Unfortunately, the corn market gave us a good price. We were all greedy at that point in time. We all remember last year how all of us analysts said we were going to have the corn crop like we're having – talking about this year, and it went away because of weather. So the last 3 years, if you'd sold and listened to all of us tell you to sell, you were wrong. So farmers didn't sell. This is probably the lowest amount of corn that farmers have, percentage-wise, that farmers have sold going into this. So, you know, you got to sit back, hope that bounce comes along from an oversold condition, and then you better get some sold.
This planting acreage report was
planting acres were as expected.
Yep, in line.
And we were, what, a tenth above. I think last year we planted 97.2, this year 97.3. You know, a month or two ago they were talking 99 million. So I don't think the planting intentions had much to do with it. I think it was all stocks.
you know, when you look at the mix, it'll change a little bit in here. And actually today even, you saw the corn bean ratio swing a little bit more back to the favor of beans, and we'll change the mix a little bit along the way. You still hear an awful lot of people talking about seed cost to a certain degree, but more importantly, you're hearing about that yield drag of corn on corn. And I think we're going to see corn acres drop a little, bean acres probably go up a little bit over time. But no matter which way you look at it, acres are big. As I explained to people all winter long, I don't care if you use 95 million acres or 97 like this, or God forbid the 99 that Informa put out at one time. It takes a drought like last year with those kinds of yields in corn to even begin to build a fundamental structure that's friendly. And I think a lot of people really didn't come to grips with that idea. You look at the last six major droughts we've had in here going back through the 1970s, the average yield on corn the following year has been 1% above trend. And only one of those times did it come in below trend. That was 1975, and it was off like about 6%, which is still 150 bushel yield or thereabouts, and you have a carryout that's 1.4 or 1.5. There isn't any way you can build a bullish scenario on corn, even if you take some acres away. But I think here, depending on the spring, the way things go, you know, and I know forecaster, we're supposed to warm up a little bit. But if planting doesn't go extremely smoothly, we'll probably get a bounce. And I think we'll see December corn rebound here. But, you know, going from where we ended up on Thursday at 538, you know, getting back to 570 may be a challenge at this point in time. And I, for 4 or 5 weeks, have said we will not get over $6 D's corn again.
One of the things, as we talk with Dale Dirkles and Wayne Nelson and Pete Manhart, that USDA said about the soybean planted acreage number, which was 77.1 million acres, as Dale alluded to, I think, in an earlier answer, was that Illinois farmers would plant more soybeans, maybe because they're not planting as many corn acres based on, you know, yield drags on corn, and that North Dakota would also plant more soybeans. Did that one surprise you at all?
Not really, Todd. You know, we're looking at the weather up there. It's wetter and cooler, and as they go back a little bit, if they're delayed a couple weeks, why, they're maybe going to think about the beans because they're going to be a pretty good crop up there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, from here east, we'd been hearing about corn on corn of 20 bushel versus 200 next door to each other. So I think there's a lot of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio people. The corn on corn, they're backing off of a little bit, and we expected that. And the North Dakota's weather, as we said.
Weather has alleviated enough of the problems in the driest areas that we don't have to worry about it, or do we still need to worry about out west?
That's going to worry, and it's going to worry people all the way through spring and all the way into the summer months themselves. But that's not really a lot different than any other post-drought year as a rule. That dry weather concern seems to hang around somewhere well into the growing season in itself. But, you know, it's interesting when you look at soil moisture maps, the dry soil area for the last 2 months has just steadily marched west, you know, and it compresses it to where it's getting central Iowa and west. And, you know, who knows where we'll be when we really get into the summer.
I suppose it means the crop progress reports on Monday afternoon will have an impact.
They already have been having.
Thank you so much to all of you. Let's get a final word from each of you. Wayne Nelson, why don't you start? Give us a final word for this week after the USDA reports.
Well, Todd, I think that the planted acreage, or the anticipated planted acreage, was very close to what everybody was expecting. And we have to look very much forward now to pricing this new crop on some rallies as we get them. We're going to have to watch our weather, but all in all, I think for us here in the Midwest and Eastern Midwest, we've got a good crop coming on.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois.
And a good crop, not a bin buster, will put us back to 1.5 to 2 billion carryout, and that's why we've been buying puts and continue buying puts to protect the bottom side along with your crop insurance.
And Dale Dirkles is with AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington.
I would say the one thing I'd take home from Thursday is don't panic and do anything rash on the break. But when we get some strength, we get some modest rebounds here over the next week to 2 weeks, I think you got to get more proactive about marketing.
Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. The other panelists in studio included Wayne Nelson today of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Now in studio with us, Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. Daryl, let's take up the numbers and the raw figures USDA released Thursday morning. The prospective plantings report came out at the end of the month of March, as it always does, and this time around those numbers were pretty close to in line with, at least for the corn, trade expectations.
Yes, the survey USDA conducted in March indicated producers plan to plant about 97.3 million acres of corn, just a smidgen larger than planted last year. Soybeans, 77.1 million. Again, just a smidgen smaller than planted last year. The corn number was pretty close to what the trade was looking for, and we'd have to say the soybeans were probably a bit smaller than the average trade guess going into the release of the report.
This is the highest corn number on record since the Dust Bowl era?
It is. As we mentioned, it's a little bit bigger than last year, so we continue that trend of very large corn acres in the U.S. I think it is interesting to see that regionally we are seeing plans to reduce acreage in what was really the drought areas last year: Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri. But the areas that really had good yields last year, North Dakota, Minnesota, and the whole southern part of the U.S. are planning to increase corn acres this year.
Grain stocks for corn were a little surprising?
I would say a little surprising, yes. At 5.4 billion bushels on March 1, inventories were about 7% larger than the average trade guess. 350, 375 million bushels more than what everybody was looking for, and suggested that feed and residual use of corn during the most recent quarter that ended February was unusually small, and the market was looking for larger disappearance and smaller inventories.
It was about a billion bushels smaller than it was last year at this time.
Yes, it's smaller. We know coming off of the very small crop of 2012, but not as small as the market expected. The market was looking for something closer to 5 billion bushels, and you get 5.4, really pretty negative surprise to the market.
What should farmers expect over the next several weeks from the commodity markets for corn?
You know, I think for the most part, I would put this in a broader perspective and saying, you know, we're continuing that pattern, what we have always referred to as a short crop, long tail price pattern. Coming off the drought of 2012, prices peaked late August, early September last year, and have generally worked lower since then. And I think the information in this report would suggest that prices continue to make that transition back to pre-drought level. So, you know, we came off of $4.50, $5 corn before the drought. It looks like we're headed back to that as the effects wear off.
The soybean acreage number was a relatively small change from last year. Was that in line with trade expectations?
You know, it was actually a bit smaller than what the market was looking for. At 78.5 million acres, average trade guess, we come in at 77.1. And so I think on the surface, that's a little bit friendly, but initially at least was not enough to overcome the negative stocks number on soybeans. And we did see new crop bean prices tumble, but it does suggest that the potential size of the 2013 soybean crop is not quite as large as what the market had in mind.
You mentioned a negative stocks number for soybeans. The stocks really aren't negative. What do you mean?
The negative implications of the stock number. USDA reported March 1 inventories right at a billion bushels. Again, the market was looking for something close to 950 million. So a 50 million bushel swing doesn't sound big, but when we're in a relatively tight inventory situation, 50 million bushels is pretty meaningful, and it suggests that soybean supplies are more abundant, more ample. We don't have to do quite as much rationing during the last half of the marketing year as was earlier thought, and the soybean market didn't take that very well in terms of price reaction.
But most would say we've been on an export pace that's blistering. Why did it not show up in this report?
It really did. I mean, we know that we have numbers on how much soybeans were exported during the quarter, and those, in fact, were large. Where the surprise came in is in the so-called feed, seed, and residual category of soybeans, and that's a small category of use, but highly variable from quarter to quarter and year to year. And most of us were expecting that what this report would reveal is kind of a normal pace of residual consumption, which would mean a small positive disappearance during the quarter. The stocks number implied a negative rate of residual use. And so if you're looking for a use of 25 million bushels and you actually get a negative 25, then you get a 50 million bushel swing in the stocks number.
When you put these reports into your calculations, what does it tell you about pricing for soybeans, old crop and new crop?
You know, again, I think we're in a similar situation as with corn, coming off of very large South American harvests and a lot of competition now in the world marketplace, confirmation that we've got decent stocks, planted acres not quite as large as expected, but still large, equal to last year. And we're seeing some improvement, I think, belt-wide in terms of moisture conditions for soybeans. All those fundamentals to me point towards a continuation of this lower price trend. And like corn, we've been saying for some months now, you know, our trajectory is going to take us back to where we started at $10.50 to $11 beans. And I think this set of reports says we're still on track for doing that.
You mentioned the weather in the United States. USDA managed to mention that in their winter wheat outlook. The seedings report was slightly smaller than the planted acreage reports. They're showing 42 million acres of all wheat.
Right. I think for winter wheat, there is concern about, you know, the lingering dryness in some areas. And more recently, and perhaps not fully captured in this report, is some really cold weather that settled into some of the hard red winter wheat areas and whether there was some freeze damage to that crop. So I think there's still quite a bit of uncertainty surrounding how many acres of wheat will actually get harvested this year. And then that raises the additional question, kind of the domino effect. If we abandon some wheat acres, does that get replanted to something else this spring? And so sorghum or soybeans or corn acres turns out to be a little bit larger than intentions.
Last summer and then all through the fall, through the winter months, many were looking at wheat stocks, and we'll turn our attention to the stocks report, suggesting that wheat of all types, frankly, even winter wheat, hard red, was being fed to livestock. But the disappearance number doesn't show that in this grain stocks report.
No, it really doesn't. You know, we saw a very large feed and residual calculation coming out of the first quarter of the marketing year last summer, and then we turned negative into the winter quarter. And now this report suggests another negative disappearance during the third quarter of the wheat marketing year. So in spite of all the anecdotal reports of pretty widespread wheat feeding, we just have not seen it revealed in the last two stocks reports from the USDA.
Oftentimes, soft red and hard red winter wheat producers will simply sell across the scale. Is there good reason to look at marketing ahead if they feel like they've got a crop in the ground that, sometime in the month of April, they're comfortable with?
You know, I had been encouraging that, particularly for soft red winter wheat producers who are looking at pretty good crop prospects, saying, you know, forward prices have been above where we thought they would be at harvest time. Now that we've seen some weakness in that market, I might become a little more patient because of the concerns about the hard red winter wheat crop with the dryness and some of the freeze damage. And we are seeing also a tick up in exports of U.S. wheat. You say maybe now's the time just to draw back and maybe allow the wheat market to recover a little bit going forward.
What are the next fundamentals for corn, wheat, soybeans that you'll be looking forward to seeing?
You know, I think on both corn and soybeans, as we enter now spring, we hope for planting those crops. What we're going to be watching, obviously, is the weather. And then we start looking at the planting progress numbers. How quickly are we getting the crop in the ground? Is it being planted timely? And then, frankly, just how widespread the recovery and soil moisture is going into next summer.
The Monday USDA crop progress reports will come very shortly.
They will, and we'll all be focused on those one more time.
All right. Thanks so much, Darrell. Darrell Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. Our thanks also go to the folks in studio with us today, including Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.